You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we find your lack of spoilers disturbing. I don't know if you guys heard, Kylo Ren kills Han Solo.
What?
What?
It's in the title, people. The spoilers awaken. Just getting it out there. So I actually waited till Sunday to see the movie because I didn't want to be there on the first day where everyone was all dressed up and craziness. But I still encountered craziness. Maybe it's just because I went and saw it at Downtown Disney. But I had to go through a metal detector just to stand in line. They were like, so if you go behind the building, locate the guys in the security suits and let them pat you down and you show them your tickets, go through the metal detector, then you can wait in line for an hour and a half to get a seat maybe in the front row of the theater. And I don't think I've seen that much security at a concert or a sports game. It was very, very interesting because I've never experienced that for a movie before. Then I stood there in line for an hour and a half where this family in front of me sort of talked about all their different experiences, like when they saw the movies for the first time and everything, and they had their kids. And it made me think of something Daniel said about this being an intergenerational movie event. Then I went in and I saw the movie, and I was blown away by the Batman versus Superman trailer. That was a pleasant surprise. I thought I was going to see the Star Trek trailer, but I saw the Batman versus Superman trailer, and Jesse Eisenberg is better on the big screen. And then I saw the movie, and it was Star Wars. So that was my experience.
By the way, what movie did you see? Sorry to interrupt your monologue. You just haven't said the name of the movie once.
Well, I thought it was kind of obvious with the reference and the spoiler and the name of the episode. And plus I built and I ended with, and it was Star Wars.
Star Wars.
It doesn't matter. They all have stupid subtitles.
Star Wars. It doesn't matter.
That's the name of episode 9, isn't it? Star Wars, It Doesn't Matter. And it's just starring The Rock. And he comes
out. I think it's Star Wars, The Search for More Money.
No, it doesn't.
I think that actually is. That's the new Spaceballs proposed title. So.
Yes, indeed.
You know, I was going to make a Rock joke.
I smelled it, though, and I sort of snuffed it out.
Star Wars, It Doesn't Matter, where the episode 9, they all come out and they're like, use the Force. And The Rock's like, it doesn't matter. And he just drops the people's elbow on Luke Skywalker and Rock bottles him.
So it's Star Wars The Force Awakens, in case anyone is confused by what movie we saw.
Because anybody in America saw any other movie. Would you want to be that one dude who was in the theater seeing what else came out this week?
Don't. I got it covered in news. Don't.
Okay. All right. Joining me this week, you've already heard the voices via Skype from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. Daniel, what was your experience like seeing this movie? Because you're a huge Star Wars guy.
I am. I did wait until Saturday. I had the option of buying opening night first screening tickets because I was that guy who saw the trailer on ESPN and then immediately clicked over and refreshed Fandango 3,000 times until I got into the queue and then realized I had to work and couldn't rightfully take that day off. So I waited until the weekend. This was my experience. I walked into the theater, showed a woman my phone with the tickets on it, and sat down.
It's not where I thought that was going when you said showed a woman.
My phone.
I thought you got it in a different way.
We showed up about 40 minutes early, and the theater was still relatively packed, but we got pretty darn good seats together, my fiance and I. And not a very rowdy crowd, although when the first, a long time ago, came up on the screen, everyone started screaming. And then at every single major character, there was screaming. So.
Yeah, I forgot to say that. Some people clapped a couple times, but I didn't.
No booing, unlike the end of George Lucas's much-awaited Indiana Jones sequel, where everyone in the theater booed at the end. Do you remember that, Justin? I saw that with you.
Did they boo? I don't remember them booing.
they booed and one guy screamed, "That sucked."
I don't remember that because I was just like, I was literally sitting there going, why were they interdimensional aliens? Like, I get aliens, but why interdimensional?
Oh, yeah. That was my experience.
Also joining us via Skype from the beach that is long, the replacement gay, William Green. Now, William, you saw the movie with me, so is there anything different you would like to note about your experience?
No, I think a little different for me. I had to show up right at the buzzer, so I had to go cut in line and pick up my ticket and squirrel my way through security and then apparently meet you in the bathroom, which I guess, you know, that's standard, little non-standard location to meet someone.
I would have thought it would be standard for you.
Not for me. There are some in the gay community that's a standard meeting place, but
you're not like in the stall, like tapping your foot four times and a half or something.
Nope. I'm not a congressman, so I haven't. I think that's reserved for the elite.
You're not a straight Republican congressman from Kansas.
Yeah, no, I haven't yet been elected. Soon as it'll be on my agenda, though. That's part of my plan.
It'll be on your gay agenda. The homosexual agenda.
You know what the sad part is? That's a better platform than all of the candidates for president right now.
Yes. Supreme Commander Snoke for president.
But no, one thing you really reacted to was one of the trailers, the Fifth Wave trailer.
Yeah, the Fifth Wave trailer. It was, they had the Fifth Wave trailer and then right after that, the Independence Day trailer. And I was watching the Fifth Wave trailer and I was like, is this just Independence Day? And also I was like, is this just Falling Skies? Falling Skies, the movie. So it was a very poor ordering for the trailers. You felt like if you've already seen the Independence Day trailer, it was a poor choice of order. I guess if you hadn't seen the Independence Day trailer, you probably just thought that there were two trailers for Independence Day.
Well, no, it came before, the Fifth Wave came before Independence Day. So the funny thing was, it was like, here's a shitty version of Independence Day starring Hit Girl from Kick-Ass. And then they were like, and now here's how you actually do the movie.
Yeah, and even the quality of the preview was like just starkly different.
Yeah.
Yes, one sucked and the other didn't. Yeah. The Fifth Wave sounds like the Teeny Bopper prequel to Ocean's 11.
I think it's some sort of war reference. I don't know, like the Fifth Column or something. They did that on V.
Oh, it's not another M. Night Shyamalan movie?
The Fifth Wave?
Mm-hmm.
No, it's basically like they're trying to do...
I know what it is. Oh. Don't waste time on that nonsense. No one should see this trailer or movie.
Exactly. We want to talk about Star Wars, Justin.
That's
right.
Can we
just move on from Fifth Wave?
All right, we'll move on from Fifth Wave and we'll talk about some Star Wars news in the news with Daniel T. Richard.
As we've already mentioned, the most anticipated sequel of certainly the year, maybe in a decade, came out this weekend, and it rocked everyone's faces off. That's right. Alvin and the Chipmunks, The Road Chip, made $27 million at the box office this weekend, crushing all expectations.
Yeah, no kidding. They made $27 million? What was its budget?
Its budget was, it looks like an actual dime. One dime.
They had to pay more than that because there's a ridiculous sign painted on one of the buildings near LAX airport. And that alone had to cost, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. So the budget had to be more
than
a dime.
I'm Googling this now. I want to know their budget because I'm impressed. They made $27 million opposite Star Wars.
Yeah. So, of course, obviously that's not the sequel we're talking about, but you almost ruined my joke in your intro, and I was going to be really pissed at you because that was the one bit of prep work I've ever done for the show.
I see here that according to Box Office Mojo, it made $21
million. Oh, well, according to the article I read earlier today, it was $27 million.
Maybe it was $27 worldwide,
Or maybe.
Maybe that counts Monday and Tuesday. I don't know.
No, of course, it's Star Wars, The Force Awakens, a sequel 30 years in the making. That's right. It came out 30 years after Return of the Jedi, and is set, in fact, in real time, 30 years later in the Star Wars universe. It grossed, are you ready for this? $325 million domestically and $364 million foreign so far, for a grand total worldwide of $689 million so far. Yes, that's my thought exactly.
That's a lot of money.
That's worldwide opening, number one ever. Opening day gross, number one ever. Single day gross, number one ever. Single day Friday, Monday, Saturday, Sunday, Tuesday, non-Monday holidays, non-Monday, non-holiday Tuesday, number one ever. Theater averages, number one ever. Opening weekend, December, holiday, 3-day gross, 4-day gross, 5-day gross. Rated PG-13 opening weekend, all number one ever. People like Star Wars, apparently.
And then, apparently, the producers of Alvin and the Chipmunks, The Road Trip, decided to put their $90 million movie up against Star Wars. And this is, according to Wikipedia, the biggest budget of all four Alvin and the Chipmunks movies. So I don't know why they decided to invest in the fourth Alvin and the Chipmunks movie and put it against Star Wars.
Doesn't seem like that marketing guy is going to keep a job. That's a poor decision. Already it is number 40 on the highest ranking money films of all time, adjusted for inflation. And that's after its first weekend. So I think it's going to climb a little higher.
I just want to know, how close is it to Avatar?
Well, it's like I said, it's number 40 at the moment. And Avatar would be number one or number two.
Number one.
So it's got a ways to go.
Yeah, there's still time.
There's still time. Were there any surprises in these numbers to you? I don't know if you looked at the numbers specifically. I didn't really see any, except that fastest to these numbers kind of surprised me. Like, fastest to 300 million, number one. I didn't think it would be fastest to 300 million. I thought there would be, Maybe, I don't know why that surprised me.
Well, I think we'll see in the trends of, like, returning, you know, as the weeks go on, like, the returning moviegoers and continued sales, like, that's really where the records are made.
Yeah, and already it had the best Monday and Tuesday following the open weekend of all time. So,
well, I mean, they've already had
return
viewers, haven't they? I mean, haven't there been people sitting there all weekend?
Yeah, in fact, a theater goer in Texas, where everything is bigger, has been named the ultimate Star Wars champion after sitting through episodes of, quote, the space opera saga for 46 hours straight, including nine back-to-back viewings of The Force Awakens. This man's name is Jim Braden. He's 40 and single. Doesn't say that, just guessing.
In the article, it says he has a kid.
Yeah.
And the reason I know that is, somebody in the comment section was like, maybe he could have spent the time losing his virginity instead. And I wanted to be like, fucking reading comprehension. Like, I wasn't even mad about, like, the nerd swipe and being like, nerds are virgin. I was mad about his lack of reading comprehension.
Yeah, doesn't say whether or not he's married, though. Just says he has a kid. So, where does it say he has a kid? He says, as a kid. The simple morality just appealed to me.
Well, it says he's watched the first viewing of The Force Awakens he watched with his 6-year-old kid. That's what it says.
No. Anyway, I don't see it, but that's okay. I believe you. I don't say you're wrong. I believe you. I just don't see it. Still single.
In the episode. This is ridiculous.
I only care about the actual movie, which we've yet to talk about.
I know. I'm patiently waiting.
Jim Braden is a content strategist at the Austin-based Dell. He was one of the 7 fans who took part in the Alamo Drafthouse Cinema, Star Wars Marathon.
I'm going to interrupt you. Put ourselves through hell, mentally and physically, says Braden, who watched the first screening of The Force Awakens with his 6-year-old son, Kyle.
Was there a point where I said I doubted you? I don't remember that. No, because there wasn't.
Don't make me stab you in the stomach with a cross lightsaber.
Don't make me stab you in the stomach with this obvious Jesus symbol. Here's the thing. He had to sit through not only the 9 screenings of The Force Awakens, but he also had to sit through all the prequels, including The Phantom Menace. I say that because that's where I would be out. As soon as that piece of shit started and Jar Jar Binks appeared, I'd be like, peace, I'm out. I'll see you when the new movie comes on. Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith, and then the original Star Wars trilogy. So, do any of you have any passion for this in any other area of your life, even remotely equivalent? I love Star Wars. I would never do this to myself.
No, because it's not enjoyable after a certain point. And then you're not giving what the object of your affection deserves.
Yeah, I don't think this is in your rational self-interest, not gonna lie.
It said he won a prize though, didn't he? He won like movie tickets for like seven-year movie pass.
Okay.
Merchandise. And a cinema seat named in his honor.
Here, you just wasted a ton of your life in the movie theater. Come back to the movie theater anytime you want.
I feel like I would have post-traumatic stress disorder or something after that. Like, I would not want to go near a movie house.
Well, yeah, like, and think about it this way. It's a movie you love and you watch it 9 times in a row. Aren't you going to be, like you said, PTSD? So you just, like, associate bad things with that movie? So even if it's awesome and you loved it, by the time you get to the 9th time, you just associate it with, like, the fact that you need to take a dump really bad in your seat.
You know, the fine print of that movie pass says he can only see Star Wars movies for the next 7 years.
Which means he'll have the opportunity to see about 36 movies. Because Disney is going to milk the fuck out of this now.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm thinking spinoff.
Because apparently they didn't have to pay these lead actors for this movie very much, except for Han Solo. I don't know if you saw this, but Han Solo, Harrison Ford, was paid between 10 and 20 million, and in fact, The Guardian says it's more like 34 million, whereas his co-stars, who played the main characters, were paid between 100,000 and 300,000. So that's a bit of a disparity. Think that's fair?
Yes.
Absolutely. The story would not work without him.
Not a popular opinion, by the way.
It's got nothing to do with the story not working without him. I don't care if he fucking sat there and jerked off for 5 minutes and they paid him $25 million. Look, it's the equivalent.
That is Han Job Solo. Yes.
good one. Is the equivalent of a veteran player on a football team, right? You're not going to pay the rookie millions of dollars because the rookie is unproven. So you're going to pay the guy who's had a long career and proven himself and is the name that people are going to go to see. Then once the rookies prove themselves and they play out their rookie deal, or if you're the case of Rob Gronkowski, 2 years into your rookie deal, they re-up you because they say, hey, this person's valuable. We can build a franchise around them. Business is business. The way they're executing is different because it's acting, it's art, but it's the same business decisions. It's the same thing as building a roster. It is a roster. A cast is a roster.
It is. If only Bill Belichick had directed. Yes. How would you feel if you were Carrie Fisher and you took home like $1.5 million?
I thought she gets a lot of money about regarding her likeness on toys and things like that. I feel like I don't think she would have taken this deal if she didn't like it.
Well, you know the guy.
There's a couple things.
Okay.
Don't they get back? Who gets back end percentages?
Solo.
Only him?
He was the only one mentioned.
Oh, I thought like Hamill and Fisher did too.
Maybe, but I know Solo did. I keep calling him Han Solo. He has a real name. It's Harrison Ford.
And then the second thing is, she got $1.1 million, right? Do you really think she's that upset about it? Like,
she was in it quite a bit. Now, the guy who made out like a fucking bandit was Mark Hamill,
yeah,
who also made around $1.5 million, and he was in it for, 40 seconds? I'm like, maybe his filming took a whole day?
Maybe. Well, you know, they had to fly him out there to that rock, and
they had to get the helicopter to pan around him 1,000 times while he looked bewildered.
No, he had a couple days, because there was also the flashback scene that he was in that was a different location, so... Because they were shooting all over England, they surely did separate days. They might not have been full days for him.
There was a flashback scene, but you don't see his face. It could have been anyone.
It's a body double? They're just like, hey, guy, hold this mechanical hand so people think you're Luke.
Yeah.
And it was actually Harrison Ford because they were like, we're fucking paying you the money. You're going to be here.
Get over here, Harrison. You got a broken leg. You can kneel. Exactly.
Yeah, by the way, was I the only one trying to figure out what scene he hurt himself in while watching the movie?
I think so. But if my guess, it would have to be when he was running from the crazy vagina beast. I don't remember what it's called, but
the Reptars.
Thank you. Well done. Wow.
You don't know why I remember that? Because that's also the name of the dinosaur on Rugrats.
It's Reptor, but your point is well taken.
He's like the Reptars are loose, and I was like, the green dinosaurs are loose.
Get Chucky.
Yeah, but of course, these actors are going to be able to renegotiate their salaries for the next movie, so they're going to go up quite a bit, especially.
I think that was always the intention, and I really do think they paid Harrison Ford for 3 movies.
Maybe. He's going to be in the next movie, Kathleen Kennedy confirmed. I mean, like, probably flashbacks, but, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. It paid off. They made $1 gazillion. So, good for them.
All right, you want to talk about the movie now?
Yes, thank God.
All right, let's do that in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. So one of the things I've always sort of had problems with Star Wars is how simplistic it seems. And this was something William talked to me about in the theater and explained the whole basic concept behind it. William, do you want to sort of give that smackdown again?
Yeah, sure. So the parallel I drew was talking about Star Wars as more like a saga than a sort of a modern, like, romantic screenplay or romantic novel. There's a certain rhythm to, like, the more simpler stories. And there are certain beats that you hit in those simple stories, those journey stories. And so there's a lot of parallels between, like, a Greek journey story or some of the other famous stories from sort of like that pre-novel era and what is in Star Wars. And that's why also it's appealing. It's a story type that is different than most of the, you know, certainly different than, you know, something like Superman or, Man of Steel or some of the other, like, stories that we've talked about on the show. But that just means it's a different type. So we have to be careful to judge it as a saga and not try to hold it to a standard of a romantic novel or a romantic screenplay.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a fantastic point, and it's one that's often missed. In these sort of epic sagas that are huge in scope, they're not so much worried about hitting granular points as they are hitting huge themes and huge, giant points. Again, go read Odysseus, as William mentioned. It's sort of just like, and then Odysseus took out this whole army, and then he went on the boat, and then he met some sirens. And it doesn't get into this granular level of detail that we're used to with modern filmmaking.
Well, do you know why that is?
Why?
Because Greek epics were told orally. So the level of detail couldn't be in there because it was different storytellers retelling it. So they had to hit the larger points every time. And it sort of became like, I think we've talked about this on this podcast before. If not, I talked about it with one of you guys off the podcast. What Penn Jillette says about Gilbert Godfrey as a comedian, that his comedy comes from the rhythm of the comedy. When you talk about epics like the Iliad and the Odyssey and Star Wars, what drives the story is the rhythm of it, the musicality of it. And that was because it was oral storytelling that began the epic genre.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of parallels to be drawn between music and epics in that there are certain themes and there are certain constructions that make a good epic. And some of them are, like you were mentioning, the nature of like the oral tradition that a lot of epics come from. A lot of stories of characters, you'll see almost the exact same kinds of events happening. And even like in oral traditions, you'll have these kind of transplanting of stories between characters or between even completely different stories. They'll go through the similar trials. And that comes from this oral tradition and this, the fact that stories were told, person to person. They were easier to remember because they were part of sort of the psyche of the culture. And those particular rhythms can be different culture to culture, but they tend to resonate with that culture. So Star Wars, what makes it popular, what makes this story work is that it respected that culture, it respected those rhythms and the story. I know we've not really got into it, but you know, a lot of the criticism of the story is that, well, you kind of knew what happened or what was going to happen, or it's very similar to A New Hope. But that's sort of like saying like the second movement of a symphony is very similar to the first movement of the symphony. They're going to be. There's a rhythm and a theme, and more like a musical theme here. I'm not talking necessarily story plot theme. That makes Star Wars Star Wars, and because it's a epic, because it's a saga, that's what you have to hit to get that effect.
All tremendous points. This is why we love you, William. But this is also why the prequels didn't work and what George Lucas didn't get about it. He tried to do those broad themes, but he also tried to bring in this very nuanced political element and, you know, factions and infighting and then the whole explanation of the Force and midichlorians and what that means. And everyone went, what the fuck is going on right now? Where's my epic? Damn it.
So do you want to talk a little bit about those parallels though, between A New Hope and The Force Awakens? Cause I mean, there's a lot of obvious ones, as far as, you know, the way that, you know, we start out on a desert planet. We have a person who's, you know, a slave probably looks, it wasn't as explicit,
slave-ish,
let's say, as in Phantom Menace. But certainly in A New Hope, there was this sort of rags to riches sort of aspect of it coming from nothing.
Farmer.
Yeah, these are things that we know from sagas are very common. You know, that you have these sort of archetypes that you hit that people can connect to. You also have, you know, the death of a major character. We talked about, Justin and I talked about that, you know, the Obi-Wan death, how it parallels Han Solo's death.
And apparently also Qui-Gon Jinn's death as well. I didn't realize that was that big of a death, but I read somewhere that somebody was like, all of those are comparable. And I was like, really?
Certainly they were, that was in Phantom Menace to be comparable. I don't think they achieved it, but that was a saga storytelling rhythm. We're talking about rhythm here. That's one of the drum beats there that's required to be a Star Wars movie.
Star Wars.
And a lot of parental issues. Sorry.
Star Wars proving the rhythm method works. If only George Lucas had pulled out before the prequels.
Thank you. Well done. I was going to say that moisture farmer actually sounds like an Urban Dictionary term for someone who gets a lot of pussy. Just wanted to put that out there.
That sounds like a Star Wars nerd thing. Like, I bet within farmer.
I bet within minutes after this publication of this podcast, someone will submit that to Urban Dictionary.
Yeah, he may be a moisture farmer, but have you seen the chicks he gets? More like a Nerf herder. Thank you. Yeah, I agree with all those things. I was just going to add parental issues, dealing with daddy issues or mommy issues is a typical epic thing. Not being able to live up to your father's expectations or betraying your father in some way. Or that's sort of how it was inverted in this one, right? It was Kylo Ren was the son in this, not the good guy. Although Rey's parenting and her heritage is a little, we're not sure yet.
I was going to save that for the open question because I'm pretty sure of her lineage.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll get there. One thing, I'm assuming everyone who's listening right now, certainly if you've made it this far, you've seen the movie. So I don't think we need to give a major summary of what's going on. But there is one thing that I think I want to clear up that even I learned as a Star Wars nerd in doing after-the-fact reading, which is what the hell the First Order is, the Resistance, and how that relates to the Republic.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. First of all, I'd like to point out that you guys are just hosting this podcast, which is fine because it's Star Wars, I guess. So it's like, what the fuck ever. But like, I was going to transition into the whole thing and say like, you know, everyone, there's a faction of people saying it's just the New Hope, so it sucks and it's not that good. So that's kind of the way to preface this discussion we're in right now. But yes, also, one of the things we didn't talk about is I called Daniel right after I saw it because I had a lot of questions. Because I was like, I don't understand any of this. And one of the things I asked was, where the fuck did the First Order come from? Because at the end of Return of the Jedi, they destroy the Empire. And then it's like, all of a sudden, we need another resistance? Why do we need another resistance if we already beat the evil people? So there's not.
Right.
I know you said J.J.'s trying to, you know, J.J. Abrams is trying to just drop us into a universe. But, like, I don't think internally to the movie, all of that was established so I know what the fuck the relationships are.
No, it was not clearly established. It is determined already. It's not being written. It's not, not to be a dig here, but it's not like Lost. Just kidding.
Well, and I want to say, going back to my point from before, that's a thing also true about sagas is that, there's often major points of the story that are just completely implicit to the story. And not in the story. They're just things that people know, almost intrinsic in the story, in the backstory, because these kinds of sagas are told and retold and retold. So the fact that, you know, we're going to discuss the First Order, but the fact that the First Order exists and there's a resistance in that area and the support between the Republic and the resistance, those things would just be already understood when you're starting to tell the story.
Yeah.
Just like the Force, right? Like if you had never seen a Star Wars movie before, there was no explanation of the Force, right? There was no explanation of why these people are fighting with lightsabers. There was no explanation about, you know, how the government of the Republic works, right? We didn't even see the Senate or any of that, right? They just kind of referred to it, right? And it's because those things aren't part of the rhythm of the story. Now, that doesn't mean that there might, like, a good saga will visit those issues and highlight those issues. And we saw that in the first three Star Wars and in A New Hope, Return of the Jedi, and Empire Strikes Back, that things were uncovered.
Wait. I thought Empire Strikes Back was the second one.
It is. I wasn't necessarily listening in order. I was just listening to them as, just listing them out. But you see the way that a lot of things are sort of like explained over time.
Some things never explained.
Yeah. And some things are meant to be surprise reveals, right? Like the relationship between Obi-Wan and Darth Vader, you know, that was kind of a surprise reveal and in the storytelling, but some things are just meant to just be, you know, they just are.
But like, for instance, Obi-Wan Kenobi in A New Hope mentions the Clone Wars, never visited again in the original series, never talked about, never revealed, never discussed, just a thing that happened.
Yeah, and then they built that shit up, and then it just fucking sucked in the prequels.
Yes.
That was the one thing I was excited about. I was like, yeah, Clone Wars!
It's like, oh, they're all shitty. And they're fighting terrible robots. But just for clarity's sake, because there is backstory to this, so for everyone who doesn't know, some of the stuff is being explained in a series of sanctioned books that are now the new, what are called canon books, meaning these are the official story, in a series called Aftermath, and it's going to come out in three different books. One is already out, one is coming out in 2016, and one will come out before the next movie, essentially. And they're explaining what happens immediately after the Empire is destroyed in Return of the Jedi, through the beginning of The Force Awakens. So they fill in all the story. But basically, for anyone who's confused, after the Empire is destroyed, as would make sense in a real sort of situation, it's not like all those people went away. Sort of like thinking about the Soviet Union coming down, it's not like suddenly everyone was like, oh, we're not communists anymore, yay! It's not what happened. They split into various factions, the Republic takes over and becomes the New Republic and establishes government, but there are still competing people, and basically the Republic says, okay, as long as you stay out of our shit, you know, we'll be fine. But one of those competing entities became the First Order, and it gained a lot of power and was becoming sort of like modern day don't know, Syria?
Did they split off from the group called Of Business?
No.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of sort of like German and Russian sort of World War II influence too, and a lot of the visuals. So I think that that's where you get that kind of crossover.
And that's comparable. So I mean, you can think about it, and you know how the way the United States has acted with Syria, for instance. So Syria, let's say, like in real world terms, Syria starts to become powerful, and other countries are like, "Eh, we don't really. That's not a good thing. But we're not going to go to full out war with them." But we're going to fund people. We're going to supply arms and money to people who can fight them from the inside. And that is, in this movie, the Resistance. So the Resistance is a group inside the First Order who's fighting the First Order leadership, that is, but it's being funded through the Republic.
I still object to this term, inside. When you told me this originally, I objected to it. I don't understand this term, inside. So you're telling me Leia, the leader of the Resistance, is also part of the First Order?
No, she was sent in to lead the Resistance, but the Resistance people, many of them came from this group called the First Order.
And certainly her motivation is because she knows that the dark side is why this First Order has gained so much power so fast.
Right.
And she's not necessarily, she is concerned with the Republic, obviously, but she's concerned with She knows at a deeper level what's the root cause in this universe of evil, and it's the dark side.
Yes, and the fact that Kylo Ren is involved, which is her son, and he slaughtered all the new Jedi in training, that's a bad thing.
No, I got that. I was just nitpicking the word inside. I just don't like it.
Oh, I mean, there are influences from the Republic, like generals and pilots and money and stuff, but it's people who were... And it's not clear that the First Order has always been the First Order from the moment the Empire ended. They more likely became the First Order recently, sort of like Germany became the Third Reich. And so there were people inside who said, well, that's fucking horrible. We're not going to do that shit. And that's how the Resistance came about. So
really the first movie, The Force Awakens, is just being it's people too incompetent to stop the rise of the Third Reich?
Yeah, essentially. Yeah. But here's the thing. This is something I hadn't thought about until I was reading about it, which is, the one sort of major, I wouldn't call it a plot hole, but thing that seemed implausible or not well done to me about the movie is the whole battle station, the Star Killer. Was that what it's called?
The Death Star?
The biggest Death Star.
Yeah.
The deathiest star.
There's always a way to beat these things, right?
Yeah, apparently, which is fly tiny ships at them. But I thought that whole device was rushed, and the weapon was huge and powerful and must have taken a lot of economic resources. But if you grant all of that, the one thing I didn't think about is that the First Order now attacked the Republic for helping the Resistance. Previously, the Republic was not at war with the First Order, but now that the First Order has killed, like, I don't know, 50 billion people, which is unfathomable in current terms, but now the Republic has to go to war with the First Order, or the Republic stops backing the Resistance. So either way, I think that creates an interesting tension for the next movie. That's me being nerdy. Where do you want to go, oh captain, my captain?
Yeah, we're waiting for the lead host here.
I don't know, that was so comprehensive that I'm just sort of like, that's everything, right?
No, it's not fucking
the end. I mean, end of podcast.
When we're talking about the critiques of the movie, so I had one major critique of this movie story-wise. And okay. I think there was an obvious deleted scene that I was just sort of like, they shouldn't have cut that scene out. So, you know, the movie opens with the stormtroopers coming in and like just slaughtering all these innocent people. But one stormtrooper is like, I'm not going to do this shit. This is fucked up. And because he watches one of his own die and they like puts the red... the blood on their mask. And then when he comes back, Captain Phasma, aka Brienne of Tarth from Game of Thrones, who you never see her face, says you need to submit your blaster for examination, inspection, because they want to know why it didn't go off. And you also need to submit for psychological testing, show up for it. And then the next scene we see is Finn taking Poe and being like, okay, you're going to help me escape. So we don't actually, they don't actually show us when Finn gets inspected and they say, oh, we're going to psychologically reprogram you. That comes later when there's an off comment where she's like, yeah, he was assigned for what was the word?
Re-education or something? Reconditioning or something?
Reconditioning was the word.
Yeah.
He was assigned for reconditioning. So this major turn for Finn's character isn't shown. I think they just cut it for runtime and assume the audience would fill in the gap. But that's an important moment for him to realize, shit, they're going to recondition me. I got to leave. So I got to take this resistance guy and get off this ship.
Yeah, I think there were a lot of deleted scenes like that. In fact, my one major critique of the movie is that it was too short. And I don't think I say that out of fanboydom. I think they legitimately cut scenes that explained things, not in an overly nuanced way, but in a way that would make it much easier to comprehend the plot. I think there was a lot of that with the fight over the Starkiller base as well. Because it sort of went from we're losing to some homemade bombs blow up to we're winning. And that didn't make sense, even though Poe later on says we lost half of our ships. It's like, you did? When? When did that happen?
No, I thought that was established when they were getting the
ship
kicked out of them.
Yeah, there was at least a visual telling of that.
Yeah.
Not enough. Not nearly enough.
Yeah, you want more gratuitous space fighting, huh?
I want more buildings destroyed by Superman.
He wants it to, first of all, not even equivalent. Second of all, he just wants it to be slower and boring so it's more like a Star Wars movie.
By the way, I just put this together because I'm super nerd. Starkiller Base, Luke's original title in the 70s was Luke Starkiller.
I feel like, yes, that's obvious.
You didn't know that. You didn't know Luke's original name was Luke Starkiller.
Yes.
Mr. I Hate Star Wars. F you.
I knew that. Yes, I did.
F you and the effing A.
Okay.
Wow, this has turned into a dick measuring contest.
All right, so.
Who's the bigger Star Wars nerd? And Justin, you're trying to play?
No, I'm not trying to play. I'm just saying, like, I thought that was common knowledge.
You didn't know that.
The other parallel we haven't discussed here is the Mos Eisley Cantina, right?
Yes. With one of the cool new characters, Maz Kanata. I liked
Master
her.
Master Yoda.
Yes.
Female Yoda lady. I can't remember the name of the character off the top of my head, but all I could think of was the little woman that does the costumes for The Incredibles, like the entire time that the first moment I saw her, that's exactly who I thought of.
Yeah, it's Edna a similar Mode. Archetype. Similar yeah. archetype.
Yep. Edna Mode.
Edna Mode. That yeah. there you go.
But she's probably not actually the Yoda character. Luke is going to be the Yoda character in this saga, right? In this trilogy.
No. Luke's going to be the Obi-Wan Kenobi character.
No, Han Solo was the Obi-Wan Kenobi character.
No, yeah. Han Solo was the Han Solo character. Until he died, and now Poe Dameron's going to be the Han Solo character.
No, I disagree with you completely. Han Solo was the Obi-Wan Kenobi character. He was the father figure for Rey, who made
he sacrificed himself to further the plot, well, mainly, but to further the growth of the character.
Can I finish, or are you going to interrupt?
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
No,
I'm going to keep interrupting because
can I finish? Can I finish?
Because I think you're right. I'm trying to give you support.
Well, let me explain it, and then you can back it up. Yes, like I agree with what William was saying, but the way I was going to approach that and say that is, I was going to do that second, because the first thing is, he inspires her to believe in herself. Because when she was on the planet, just like Luke, nobody recognized her brilliance, right? She has this brilliant mind and these force abilities, and she's just, you know, being forced to scavenge and get a quarter portion for scavenging all the time. Then she gets the Millennium Falcon, can fly it and fix it as well as Han, and he offers her a job. That's like her being offered, that's like Luke being offered to train under Obi-Wan. Then when Kylo Ren kills Han in front of her, that's the same thing as Obi-Wan being killed in front of Luke, because it solidifies the hate between Rey and Kylo Ren, the same way Luke had hate between himself and Darth Vader. Because otherwise there's no reason for Rey to hate Kylo Ren besides the fact that he's evil. But now it's personal. because her father figure, who's the first person to believe in her, has been killed in front of her, and she knows the man who did it.
But the point, I don't disagree with you about any of the specifics of your analysis. I disagree with that. That has to be accomplished by the Obi-Wan Kenobi type character. Obi-Wan Kenobi was the mentor character, the person who trains, the person who initiates him on the Force journey. I don't think Han serves that character. I don't think there was that character for Rey in this movie. That character will be Luke Skywalker.
Okay, this is my question then. Doesn't in the second movie Yoda train Luke?
Yes.
In the second movie, we presume that Luke is going to train her, right?
Right, so I'm saying Luke is Yoda. It's the same thing.
No, disagree. Disagree with how that works.
He's the last remaining Jedi Master, and he trains the new one to bring the Jedi back?
No, disagree with how that metaphor works.
So
I don't know. Like, I know, what's I don't disagree know. With?
Well, I think you're outvoted.
That's fine. I can be outvoted. I'll set up my own order. It'll be called the Second Order. We'll have our own flags and shit.
But William, since you're on my side, I only interrupted you because I agreed with you. I just wanted to be more specific about it. Do you see how I was more specific about the analysis?
Yep, makes complete sense to me.
All right.
Nope, wrong.
I'm on your side, Justin.
All right.
Justin's going to sit over and tell me who the Obi-Wan Kenobi character is.
It's Han Solo!
Mm-hmm.
Internet, you vote on this.
Mm-hmm. Moving on. Are we still talking about the errors in the movie? The bad things about the movie?
No, let's move on to the open questions.
Okay.
So we were sort of talking about that when we're talking about, like, what the fuck are the politics here? But, like, one of the open questions for me, because we just talked about the Mos Eisley Cantina parallel, is who is this woman? How does she know so fucking much? Edna Mode.
Maz Kanata?
Yeah, whatever her name is.
Maz Kanata? Sorry. Who is she? She's an old friend of Han's. She's a smuggler. I'm sure she'll come back up because she needs to explain how she got Luke's lightsaber.
Right, that's what I'm saying. How did she get Luke's lightsaber and how does she know so much about it? That's an open question to me.
Yeah. Agreed. I don't think there's a good answer to that.
Yeah, is she the Honor Among Thieves character? You know, that's kind of a saga archetype. She's probably in that character type.
So we can Boba kind Fett.
Of. No, she would be. I'm trying to think of a good parallel for an Honor Among Thieves character.
Lando Calrissian?
Yeah, like Lando. Lando from the Star Wars universe. I was trying to pick someone outside the Star Wars universe, but now my mind is full of Star Wars. Because I'm still trying to bring evidence that this is a saga for those internet nerds that criticize the story for being repetitive.
Yes, indeed. So I think that's a legitimate open question versus, for instance, the article that went viral this week on the HuffPo called 40 Unforgivable Plot Holes in Star Wars, most of which were unanswered questions, not plot holes.
Yeah, but this is something I always rant about on here. People don't know what a fucking plot hole is. Just because it's not explained in the movie doesn't make it a plot hole. The movie is sticking to a theme and in this case a saga. It's sticking to a rhythm. That doesn't mean every fucking question that pops into your head has to be answered or it's a plot hole. When Jack Bauer doesn't piss, that doesn't mean it's a plot hole in 24. It just means stylistically they've decided to not have Jack Bauer have to go to the bathroom because he's awesome.
Right, exactly. And there are even things in this, by the way, just so I can shit on HuffPo, that were absolutely fucking answered in the movie or shown in the movie, if not answered. One of them, number 11 out of 40, Kylo Ren is the head of the Knights of Ren, but there are no other Knights of Ren in the movie. Yes, there fucking are. There's a shot of it. They're in the rain. They fucking are surrounding Kylo after they show Luke's metal hand on the R2-D2 droid.
Yeah, that was a flashback. This is Lost syndrome. And what I mean by it is people don't pay attention to everything, and then they assume if they didn't pay attention, the answer's not in there. It's reading comprehension.
And then again, number 12, not a plot hole, something that you might complain about, but not a plot hole. Captain Phasma is supposed to be a big deal character, but she's only in it for a little while. That's not a plot hole in any conceivable way.
That's a marketing issue.
Right.
They were trying to market this movie. One of their huge key demographics was women. That's why they marketed Gwendolyn Christie, because she's a very strong character as Brienne of Tarth on Game of Thrones, a strong female character.
Right, right. If there are any, you know, wait, what were we talking about?
Oh, we're talking about the open questions.
Plot holes.
Open questions.
And then you
Thank
were
you.
Ranting about HuffPo and their
okay.
plot holes.
I told you there would be so many tangents I could go on. You got to keep me in line. Open question. So the obvious big open question to me, and which we alluded to earlier, is who the hell are Rey's parents? How did she end up on Jakku?
I don't know who her mother is, but her father is Luke Skywalker.
Dun dun dun! And big bold claim.
This is again. You're going to argue with me, Daniel. But
yes.
The first trilogy is about Anakin Skywalker. The second trilogy is about Luke Skywalker. The third trilogy is about Rey Skywalker.
I don't think so. I think that's where they're going to break.
So do you think Leia also slept with Lando and Finn is Finn Skywalker?
That'd be fucking awesome. No, I don't think that's what happened. So here's the argument against Rey being a Skywalker. It's a very simple one, if elegant in its simplicity, which is that Jedi are not supposed to have children. Jedi are supposed to be sort of like monks, detached from physicality and relationships and serving only the Force. And especially if Luke has been doing that for basically since the end of the Empire, when did he have time to father a kid?
I don't know. That can be explained. But the Star Wars is the saga of the Skywalker family.
Yeah, I mean
they are the most powerful Force wielders.
A competing theory is that she would be Leia's other child, Leia and Han's other child.
But if that is the case, you've lost me. I'm going to hate Star Wars again. Because that makes the writing and execution of this movie so horrible. If they have a daughter together and they are traumatized and they're reconnecting about their trauma, and they never even mention, they're like, you have to get our son back. I can't have lost both of our children forever, or something like that.
Well, like, there is one. Well, hold on, Justin, before you go too far in this rant. Remember, both Anakin and Padme did not know they had twins, right?
Right. Right. Wait, indeed.
Padme didn't know she had twins.
Maybe she didn't know, but she died like immediately. So
Yeah, exactly. She knew when she actually had them, but
Darth
died.
Vader didn't
okay.
know he had twins.
Okay, yeah. So how would Leia not know she had twins? Or here's a competing theory. This is how it could work. Okay, you've convinced me it could work. Leia okay. was pregnant when Han left, didn't tell Han, and then hid her kid away. Because she didn't want Kylo Ren to kill her.
Right, so I
and then she didn't have to tell Han again because she was like, I can't deal with all this. And that makes sense with the way nerds were like, hey, that hug meant more than it seemed between Leia and Rey.
Yes, indeed. And
really?
So
I thought they were hitting on each other.
That would be an epic scene.
I mean, they're both pretty awesome. Both,
get that slave bikini back out.
They're both bangable, so.
Well.
By some on the podcast.
I would bang Carrie Fisher.
Desperate times. So I don't.
No, she's awesome. All right.
I don't
the
necessarily
awesome card
know
works.
About the first part, although I think that's 100% plausible. But I think the second part is exactly right. The reason she wasn't talked about and mentioned is because they are protecting her from Kylo Ren in the same way that Luke and Leia were protected from Darth Vader.
It only makes sense if Han doesn't know.
I don't think it necessarily makes only sense if Han doesn't know, but I think that is a 100% plausible theory.
All I'm saying is it'll piss me off and make the movie shittier if Han knows. All right? Because when they're by themselves and nobody's around, unless they're like super paranoid people are spying on them, then they would have said something.
Well, maybe they did in non-movie scenes, Justin.
Come on.
Well, and keeping a secret from Han would make sense because Leia presumably could resist, you know, giving up a secret even under duress, like under force torture.
which we haven't talked about the forced rape scene yet.
I can take whatever I want.
but yeah, not telling Han is at least plausible.
I think one of the open questions from the movie is whether or not Adam Driver is attractive.
William?
Maybe? I don't know. Like, I'm going to Google a picture of him not in character really fast.
You're just going to throw up because he's on the show Girls.
He takes that helmet off and he has the flowing black hair. But does that make him attractive?
Yeah, I don't really like the hair. Question. Okay, here's a picture of him in short hair. Okay, let me see.
He's got an
interesting face. He's a good bad guy. He's got a interesting face.
See, my fiance had her own moisture farm going when he came on screen. She was totally like, oh my god, he's so hot. Now she's hitting me. But,
well, that explains why she's with you if she has weird taste.
Oh, hilarious. Yes.
Maybe she just likes black flowing long hair.
Yes. It's the only thing she likes black. Hopefully. That was not a racist comment, by the way.
It was talking about your heart.
Yes, indeed. So, I think there are a few other open questions, but I think those are the main ones. Obviously, Finn's backstory is still, I don't know if they'll get into it or not, but he did come from somewhere. He's not a clone. The clones are all gone.
Yeah, no, I read an interview where J.J. Abrams said that all of the backstories, and he specifically mentioned, like, Finn and Rey, were intentionally not explained. So I do think Finn will be involved in this somehow, because there's, one of the elements to this saga is destiny, right? It's not just like this shit happens randomly. So there was destiny with what Finn did in meeting up with Poe and everything. So I'm really interested to see what his backstory is, because I think that was one of the best additions to the saga, was a stormtrooper rebelling, going against his training and joining the light side. That was never done before.
Because they were all clones before. They were all sort of mindless. I mean, not mindless. Clones had reasoning ability, but they were just immature.
Well, they were young.
They were fully mature in body. They were the Jem'Hadar. Yeah,
exactly. They were mature in body, but they were like 3 years old, right?
Right.
So, I think this is a good transition into some other stuff. But I mean, I think in general, Finn and Rey's interactions were just outstanding throughout the entire film.
Yeah, and that was another thing we haven't talked about parallel-wise, the whole triangle. They were, they were building up Finn and Rey, but then they also hinted at when Kylo Ren had Rey over the cliff with his lightsaber, and it looked like he was about to kill her, like, suddenly he got a boner and was like, I can just train you instead.
Dark side and chill?
Yeah, exactly. The dark side and chill, yes.
Yeah.
Although
if it ends up being his sister, that actually plays into our theme here, because there is some parallel here with the incest.
Right, so. I was just going to say that, yeah. So that does lend credence to that he's Han and Leia's kid.
Yeah. Also, by the way, expanded universe tangent. The expanded universe was what the books and comic books and video games were before there were new movies, and now those are no longer sanctioned. Like, those are just according to Lucasfilm myths, or like the legend series or something like that. But in the expanded universe, Leia and Han have twins, Jason and Jania Solo. So I don't know if this could be eventually an homage to the expanded universe in some way, but.
Okay.
Was that a spoiler? I don't know.
No, I think so. It's okay to theorize, but I think any time you theorize based on the expanded universe, you could be led in a very wrong direction.
Well, they said they took inspiration from it, right?
Yeah, but that's a thing you say once you crush all nerdy fanboys' dreams. And believe me, the nerdy fanboys are fucking up in arms.
Yep, it's like a million voices crying out in terror.
And we're not silent. It just got louder.
# expanded universe matters.
Yes,
that exactly. That should be the # when you tweet out this episode.
You want to come back to my apartment and see my expanded universe?
Not as good as Dark Side and Chill.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
Can we, dude, we need to make that happen. It's no longer come to the dark side, we have cookies, it's dark side and chill.
A picture of Kylo Ren with his flowing
hair. Hold on, hold on. I'm updating my Grindr profile.
So.
You said it's, you know, it's a new generation. You know, this is like the fourth generation of Star Wars, you said? Well, now the
arguably,
new,
yeah, third or fourth.
Now the new generation, their version of dark side, come to the dark side, we have cookies, is dark side and chill. Make that happen, internet. You're welcome.
Yeah.
Speaking
right.
of which, let's talk about that. The way this is going to influence the culture going forward, because we've seen, one of the things we can't deny is the way Star Wars has affected storytelling in Hollywood, the way Greek epics have affected storytelling throughout time. I mean, you look at J.J. Abrams and the number of things he's done with Damon Lindelof and on his own, and the way that's changed things. I mean, the new Star Treks were basically Star Wars movies. Lost was very influenced by Star Wars. I mean, if you go down the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, Carlton Cuse has a new show coming out starring Josh Holloway. In that show, he's basically playing Sawyer. Well, Sawyer was basically the Han Solo character in Lost. So, without Star Wars, you would never have the show Colony on USA Network starring Josh Holloway and written by Carlton Cuse.
Yeah, agreed. Very influential. Unbelievably influential. Basically, when you talk to any major filmmaker and you ask them, what was the movie that defined your childhood? It's Star Wars. It's pretty crazy.
But, so, I have a question. It might be a little bit of a tangent, but it goes back to the cultural influence. So one of the big influences the first Star Wars had was kind of that return to the very, like think of all the different cuts and wipes that were used and the widescreen format. There's a lot of like filmmaking things that were done that, that re-influenced, Hollywood. I didn't notice as many, and it might just be because I've only seen it one time. I didn't really watch it. I watched it in the universe. You know, I watched it just, you know, suspending disbelief, but not watching it to see what the effects were, like that were causing the things that I were feeling. So I need to definitely watch it again. But I certainly didn't notice any of those sort of like those iconic wipes. And you did have some of those scenes. I think I mentioned it, to Justin when we were sitting in the theater. You know, the ship revealing the big giant Death Star and things like that, were very echoey of A New Hope. But I think one thing that will influence Hollywood going forward is this return to like the animatronics and puppets instead of, all green screen special effects, right? Like there was definitely an aspect of this movie that was more, it was definitely more Star Wars because it was more rough around the edges on some of the effects. That was not that I noticed any and said, oh, that's an effect. It was more of like, these seem like real characters, that you can touch.
So it's punk. You're saying Star Wars is punk.
So there were a few wipes. I noticed that specifically and I looked for that specifically. There were a few.
I did pick that up as well.
The thing about, I hope, Star Wars influences movies to go back to more practical effects instead of CGI, because for as good as we think our CGI is, it still fucking sucks. It still looks like CGI. So stop it, Hollywood. But that being said,
it's the uncanny chasm. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, the uncanny valley.
Yeah. Yep. I think we're in that.
We are absolutely in that. Still fucking sucks. Stop doing it. But that being said, we are so far away from a time that we're used to using practical effects that I actually thought the practical effects in this movie were in some ways worse than the practical effects used in the original movies.
I kind of agree with you. And I think that hopefully these things will mature as the Star Wars movies, as we get more Star Wars movies. You know, there's a lot of things that just aren't done anymore. You know, like a lot of the practical arts on special effects that just they aren't done that way anymore. And I think that bringing some of these things out in a movie like Star Wars that, you know, obviously has the budget to support it, it's going to hopefully reinvigorate some of those effects.
Yeah, one specifically, and then I don't want to beat a dead horse, but in fact, I would have rather have beaten the dead horse creature that tried to capture BB-8 near the beginning. That creature which like the guy on it moved in time with the head of the horse thing he was riding, looked like two guys on stilts moving a giant piece of plastic. Like, it was laughably bad.
There was one, and I think maybe it was when Finn was going to the city on Jakku from the desert, where they decided in the lower left of the frame in the foreground to have a little green Muppet. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yep.
Where
yep.
I saw that and I was like, they should have not fucking had that in there because it's so distracting. It looks really bad. It was just like, let's put a cool little Muppet in the front of the frame.
Yeah, indeed. There were a few things about it that I didn't like. But in terms of influence on the culture, certainly there's a pop culture influence, right? Like already I can't literally turn my head in the world without seeing BB-8. BB-8 is everywhere. Everything is BB-8. And I think they're sort of taking the concept that George Lucas had of merchandising and turning it up to 11, as they say. So I suspect that a lot of pop culture things this year will be influenced by Star Wars.
Let me get this right. You think Disney is going to merch the shit out of Star Wars? You really think that?
I know it's a radical new
opinion. We should have moved this to the news section.
So is
going against the grain.
Is BB-8 going to be as iconic as R2-D2?
Yes. Yes. I think that is something they nailed in terms of a new droid. Like, they couldn't have done that better than they did. And all the kids I know who are into Star Wars already fucking love BB-8. It is their thing. Like,
yeah, but does he have the sass of R2-D2? Or is he just the girl-friendly R2-D2?
I saw some sass. I liked, he did the little shocky thing a couple times. You know, he ran into the guy and...
I'm gonna say it. I thought the thumbs up was stupid and looked really bad.
No, I liked it.
Oh, but it got laughs, though. Yeah, it got laughs.
It did. It was adorable.
I can understand how you might think it was stupid, but it was the right beat there. It was a humor beat. That's what the droids are there for, are for the humor beats.
I understand. It was the humor beat, and I understand the LCD loved it, but I hated it.
Interesting. So I think BB-8 it will be an enduring iconic character. I think Rey will be an enduring iconic character. Little girls already love Rey. They want to be Rey. Where will Finn fall in this? And I know I immediately sound Rey. Like a giant race. Oh God. Yes.
Wait.
I know I sound immediately not, sound like
this
a giant
late
racist,
in the episode.
But,
I'm not sure if you can call it immediate.
But it's true. But is Finn going to be the kind of iconic character that you got out of the original Star Wars movies?
I think it depends on his backstory. It depends on his reveal and what he has to do with all of this and where he goes. I mean, I know that sounds so fucking obvious, like the story is not yet to be told. But I mean, we sort of see where Rey's whole story is going and Kylo Ren's. But I mean, even Poe in this was very underdeveloped.
Yeah.
Because, you know, sort of like part of the reason I knew they had to kill off Han Solo was one, they already had the Han Solo character in the beginning. And then he disappeared. And two, when Han showed up, he like became the hero of the movie. And I was like, if these characters are going to shine on their own and be heroes, you can't have Han.
Yeah.
So I think we have to see what's going to happen with Finn and Poe, because an enduring friendship was foreshadowed between the two of them. And the idea that they're going to team up and do something in the same way Luke and Han did, I think that will happen. I just don't know how, why, or what they're going to do.
Yeah, agreed. So, I mean, obviously, language, quotes, I mean, can you go anywhere in the world and say, may the force be with you, and people will understand what you're saying? Absolutely.
Right, so that's something I was thinking about while I was watching the movie, and I want to play a game with you guys. I want to play predict the iconic line. So what lines do you think will become iconic and repeated over and over again, sort of like, these are not the droids you're looking for?
Yes, I am your father.
Right, that's a sort of obvious one, right?
Yeah, no, I'm saying some of the iconic lines from Star Wars.
Right. Do you think
it's a trap?
But was that obvious? Was that obvious when it came out?
I don't think that one was obvious. That just became an iconic line, sort of in the meme culture. But
so, were there any iconic line or obvious iconic lines in this movie? Let's start there. Any obvious ones?
Obvious is hard. Right. So there are ones that they clearly want to be iconic lines.
Let's start with that.
Okay. So Chewie, we're home. They want to be an iconic line.
Not going to happen.
Because they've played that a billion times and it shows up everywhere. I think another one they want to be an iconic line is, where did it go? Rey's line to Finn, stop taking my hand.
Oh, boo. That's like trying to make it all feminist and shit.
I know, but they want that to be an iconic line. She repeated that kind of line twice to hammer it home. They want that to be an iconic line. Oh, and then the other Han Solo line, it's true, all of it. The dark side, the Jedi, they're real.
I think that one could be.
It's true, all of it, yeah. So, I think those are the ones they want. Any other obvious ones that they want that came out of this?
I can't think of any.
Yeah, but I think there are some that might. I have some suggestions there, but...
Okay, well, do you want to go with those?
The one I think that has the best chance, because bad guys always have a really good chance with iconic lines, is I will finish what you started. The full line is, show me again, grandfather, and I will finish what you started. Kylo Ren to the Darth Vader mask.
Mm-hmm.
Such a chilling moment because of everything that's the emotion and the history that's packed into that scene. So that's my candidate. One of them. I have others.
William, do you have any?
It's so fresh that I don't even have any. Like, I don't know. You know, I think that's only going to come with repeated viewing and time for me to figure out, because it's like some of the parts that certainly hit the highest emotions. The Luke, I am your father moment is certainly the confrontation between Han and Kylo Ren. But you know, is there a line from there that's going to be repeated endlessly? I'm not sure.
No, I think what'll be repeated endlessly from that is where the sun goes out. And then he stabs him right after. I think that'll be mimicked in a bunch of movies and TV shows.
Yeah, because the line he says there is not iconic in the sense that it's not unique. He says, thank you, and then he stabs him.
Right, we might see that happen a lot. So it might become iconic in that sense, but the line's not unique enough to be iconic in itself. To me, an iconic line has to have a couple elements to it. The first thing is... it has to have a sort of uniqueness to it, to that it's really representative of what it is, of what it comes from. So when you hear it, you know what it comes from. Like, these are not the droid you're looking for. That doesn't seem like it would be an iconic line, but you hear it and you go, oh, that's Star Wars. You know, you don't necessarily know when in Star Wars it happened, which of the three movies it happened in, but it's Star Wars. It also has to be the best thing or stand out in the scene itself that it's in. Sure. And another thing that can be very positive for it, if it can be applied to other situations. The reason these are not the droids you're looking for is such an iconic line is you can use that in so many situations.
True. Good points.
So there's a few that I think could really become iconic in that way. I think Snoke saying, his training is not yet complete. Is that the line?
Yes.
Yeah.
Pretty close to that. Yeah.
I think that could become iconic because you can apply that in other things all the time, right?
Yep. This is not my final form.
Yeah. Exactly. And you can see parents saying that about children, coaches saying that about, their players, teachers saying that about students, friends saying that about each other. That can come up. And then, Daniel, you'll know this more than I will. The scene where she uses the Jedi mind tricks on the stormtrooper, what's the last thing she says? And drop the blaster?
And
yeah, something like that. And drop the blaster, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That might, because of the way it stands out in the scene and punctuates the scene. And then the one I think is really going to become iconic is the droid is not for sale. Because that can be applied in any situation. It's very unique to her character, the scene, and the movie. Like, there's, you know, it has to come from Star Wars because the droid is not for sale. It echoes, these are not the droids you're looking for. And it also can only be Rey in that line. Like, you hear that line and you know exactly what's going on. You can picture it in your head. And you can use it for a bunch of stuff. When people are like, hey, can I have that? The droid is not for sale.
Yeah.
So I think that one will end up being repeated a lot.
Maybe. I don't think this scene is emotionally powerful or interesting enough. But then again, was the "these are not the droids you're looking for" scene? I don't know.
Correct. So, and the other thing that it has to its advantage is children. And what I mean by that is Rey is going to inspire a generation of girls. And yes. BB-8 is loved by the children.
True.
And that's about Rey sticking up for BB-8. That may not have played emotionally for us, but that was a big moment for the new generation of Star Wars fans to bond those two characters. Because even though BB-8 was Poe's droid, he felt more like Rey's.
Yes. Yeah. Indeed. And I think he will be. But I have another nominee that I remembered that I think has a strong potential, which is Han screaming at Finn, "That's not how the Force works!"
Yeah, that actually, I didn't think of that one, but yeah, I think so.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that can be applied anywhere, right?
Exactly. Even, like, in any situation where someone's, like waving their hand in front of you, like, "You will burp, 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 burp." You can scream back at them now. "That's not how the Force works!"
Right. So they're trying to tell you how to do something, like, they know, and you know, and you're just like, "That's not how the Force works!"
Yes. Indeed.
Like, think about that. The number of times, like, somebody, like, you're in the middle of doing something, and somebody comes and tries to backseat drive you, basically. That's the perfect response.
Yeah.
I'm going to start using that.
Great line, by the way.
Yeah.
Great writing there. Han Solo has a lot of great lines in this movie.
Well, that's what I was saying, where he stole the show. That's why they had to kill him.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think there are a few other lines that were good. I don't know if they'll become iconic. They were good, noteworthy. I wrote them down. Like, "Without the Jedi, there can be no balance in the Force." That could be sort of a parody line. "Without Tom Brady, there can be no balance in the NFL." Things like that. Let's see. Han says at one point, "Women always figure out the truth." Always. That's not specific enough, I think.
No, it's not. It's a very Sawyer line.
Yeah. Maz Kanata has a couple. She says, "If you live long enough, you see the same eyes in different people."
Yeah, that's not specific enough to Star Wars, though.
Yeah. And then she also says, "The light, it's always been there. It'll guide you."
Yeah, it makes me think of Mufasa.
And then the final one I had, which is not so specific to Star Wars, but might become aware, is in Rey's flashback, the words, "These are the first steps," are heard.
I don't think enough people pick that up, but it might in the long run once people start figuring it out.
Yeah. But anyway, so those are my few.
All right.
Especially, that's not how the Force works.
So let's give our reviews for this. I'll go first, since I probably am going to give the worst review. So here's my thing about this movie. I enjoyed it. I'm glad I saw it. I'm glad I saw it before anything was spoiled for me, because I think that not knowing what's going to happen makes it a better movie. But my rating is...
Yeah, I think I'll just stay here a while. Enjoy the sunrise.
Now, the reason I gave it this rating is, while I think it's the best Star Wars movie ever, and I wasn't bored and I enjoyed watching it, to me it's still a Star Wars movie, and I don't feel the need to go back and rewatch it. Okay, I watched it, I got it, it was cool, moving on. That's how I feel about it. William, you want to go next? Daniel, I'm saving you for last so you can make the case for it.
So I thoroughly enjoy this movie. I went in with pretty low expectations, so that probably helps inflate the score a little bit. But I enjoyed this return to saga storytelling. I enjoyed the return to making this not a movie about effects, but a movie that has some really cool effects. It definitely hit emotional points that the original Star Wars movie hit for me. So I'm rating it...
This is blasphemy! This is madness!
Madness.
This is Sparta!
So I tend to agree more with William, but I'm actually glad that Justin gave it the rating he did, because... Our beautifully nuanced, i.e. horribly unnuanced rating system of awful, average, and the best ever.
That's the point. It's controversial.
is hard to get exactly where I want on this film, which I think is somewhere between average and the best ever. So I think the three of us, if we combine those scores, it gets closer to where I think it is. The thing about this movie is it returned, it felt like a Star Wars movie to me. And that was the first thing that I was relieved about. Because the original, or I'm sorry, the prequels that Lucas made did not feel like Star Wars movies. They felt like something else, something dark and shitty. But this felt like a Star Wars movie. It hit all the emotional points, as William said, and there was some nostalgia to that. I'll grant that. Especially in the Han Solo scene where I bawled like a 9-year-old child. But overall, I think the story structure was there and the way it was told was there. All the pieces were there, including the music. We haven't talked about the music. My God, the music was so good. It was unbelievably good. I will have to judge this. I will have to come back and revisit my judgment of this movie depending on how the entire new franchise comes out. But I think this was a tremendous start. And in terms of movies that were hyped, this movie didn't fail in that it was hyped, overly hyped, and it didn't disappoint me. Every other movie that is hyped like this has been a disappointment, except for one other one, which is The Dark Knight. But this movie didn't disappoint me. Maybe it didn't live up to the 96 or whatever percent it is on Rotten Tomatoes, but it didn't fail. And that in and of itself, believe it or not, is a major success. Now, as a film, I thought it was good. It was exciting. It wasn't the greatest film I've ever seen. It probably wasn't even the top 10% of films I've ever seen. But it was solid enough, especially what it was up against in terms of expectations, how badly it could have failed, that it deserves a rating of, this is Star Wars!
This is blasphemy! This is madness!
Madness.
This is Sparta!
All right, I generally agree with everything you just said there. It's just that, you know, I have no real, like, sort of love for Star Wars. Like, I wasn't moved by Han's death at all. I was just sort of like, oh, yeah, that's where he dies. Oh, cool.
Weeped like a black woman at a funeral.
Yeah.
All right. Take me instead!
Well, and I think, you know, looking forward, you know, predicting the future, you know, the second movie was certainly the one most of the critics and most of the fans enjoyed the most in the original trilogy. So I'm looking forward to the next one being even better.
Yes. Yeah. Star Wars, The First Order Strikes Back.
So let's see what the rest of the internet thought. It's time for Reddit on Reddit.
Sony stupid, Xbox lame, PC gaming all the way. EA blows, Steam rocks, God rest for my firewall. See, these things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, whoring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't post it, but we will repost it.
First Reddit. What's a good revenge for spoiling Star Wars? So apparently,
not being allowed to play in the NFL.
I was going to say, presumably this will have been done to Michael Sam.
Yes. Yes. Fucking Michael Sam. Do we need another reason to hate that guy? Tweeted out spoilers about Star Wars less than 24 hours after they were out. A good revenge. Well, one, murder. No, clearly not. I obviously don't think you should murder people to spoil Star Wars. But if it's someone who you seriously care about, it depends on the context, right? If they accidentally spoil Star Wars for you, like it's a slip, or you overhear them or something, is revenge really necessary? I mean, maybe you put laxative in their coffee. I don't know. But if it is someone who's being malicious about it, like there are actually people on the internet this week who, when they were fighting with people on the internet, just purposely spoiled Star Wars to piss them off. I think that's horrifying. I think that's horrifying on many levels, not the least of which is that it just shows a complete disregard for values, which I take very seriously. So in those cases, revenge is often not necessary because you're not interacting with that human being on a daily basis. Just cut them out of your life completely.
Yeah.
They're not worth it. They're trash humans. They're fucking lower than a Gundark.
I think
do you have real revenge, though? I don't know.
I think it's interesting that this is, like, the one thing people have decided not to spoil. Like, everything else, you know, Snape kills Dumbledore, the Red Wedding, there's spoilers everywhere. But with this movie, like, everyone on the internet decided to get together and say, hey, let's not spoil Star Wars.
Yeah, I thought that was fascinating. Like, I it's not like I was like purposely avoiding spoilers, and but you know, like I'm still on Facebook and Twitter and LAFORGE_ for those of you who want to follow me on Twitter. But you know, I didn't see any spoilers on my stream, either stream. So it was like the internet collectively decided to let everyone enjoy this movie, which is pretty benevolent.
Again, because this is multiple generations of people who grew up with this. This is serious business, folks.
I did see the best suggestion for revenge for spoiling. So I don't remember where I saw it or where I read it, but I'm sure, pretty sure it was the internet. And somebody said, if somebody spoils Star Wars for me, I will write down who they are, and when the next movie comes out, I will see it in the first showing, write a detailed summary of it, and then whoever spoiled it for me, I will send them that detailed summary before they see the second movie. And I thought, that's the best way to do it. Because it's like, you're going to fuck me over with a spoiler? I'm going to take it and do it to the nth degree to you next time. That'll teach you a lesson.
All right. It's pretty hardcore. But I get it. I don't know. I don't have any real revenge. I don't think you should take revenge. Revenge is not the way of the Jedi.
To quote an iconic line from Highlander Endgame, life brings hope and pain, but revenge never brings redemption.
Revenge of the Sith, man.
All right, next Reddit. And I think we might have already sort of answered this one, but why is the Star Wars franchise such a big hit?
Well, there are some superficial answers that we didn't cover. I think laser swords are really fucking cool. Like, that is just a thing that grabs the heart of a child and just does not let go.
Yeah, like, I think that's the business side is often overlooked or mentioned in passing, but like the whole way, like the advantage that the original movie took with taking over the merchandising and handling the merchandising and the way that was done is the execution of that is why is a huge reason why Star Wars became a cultural phenomenon.
So Lucas Saul Alinsky'd Star Wars by just repeating it over and over again.
No, I don't want to diminish the aspect of coming up with, you know, he certainly consciously, the original team, not just him, but the others involved in the first Star Wars, you know, they made things that were merchandisable. You know, like there are things here that make sense. You know, you don't see a whole lot of Avatar toys, right? Like that's going to go away. But the Star Wars stuff, it's not going to go away.
Yeah, it allows you. I mean, part of the whole business of the saga, I think psychologically, is that you can envision yourself in this universe. And I think specifically with the toys that allowed young boys especially to imagine themselves in this universe, whether it was as Luke Skywalker or as their own Jedi or as their own Sith or
as their own... I thought I was supposed to talk about young boys.
Smuggler character. different way.
That's a Jedi controversy that they've yet to do. That's the real reason Kylo Ren is evil. The twist of this one is Luke's evil because he abused Kylo Ren sexually because he had to suppress his urges.
The Jedi are the Catholic priests of the Star Wars universe.
Padawan always sounded like a horrible
term.
We just
lost all of the Star Wars fanboys that are listening to this podcast.
And Catholics, so.
Wait, we had a Catholic listener?
I think we had one, yes. So yeah, all those things. And then of course, obviously you have big spaceships and explosions and Death Stars and epicness. And that's all part of it. We've talked about that already, so.
Yeah, I mean, you've alluded to it when you talk about the saga, and, you know, we talked about it before with the whole rhythm of it, and, you know, Joseph Campbell's The Hero's Journey. There's a rhythm to the storytelling that's very soothing to people. It's dependable, and they know what's coming. It's comforting. And ultimately, it's, people crave comfort.
Okay, you're getting insulting. But I also...
No, I don't think that's not insulting. I mean, that's what makes it have a mass appeal, is that it's not... It touches something that every human can understand.
Right.
You know, we say lowest common denominator, but we're not, that's not, it's not in an insulting way. It's in a, It's more of a shared experience.
Yeah, right? See, like, I heard
a shared human experience.
I heard Justin's undertones.
No. I was
Star
not
Wars
using...
is for dumb people.
No. That's not what I'm saying. I was not saying LCD in this case. But yes, I wasn't saying malevolent LCD. I was saying benevolent LCD. So I wasn't using the term LCD. But I do agree with what William's saying. I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean it in the same sense that the rule of the, you know, Chekhov's rule of the gun. If you have a gun in Act 1, it has to go off in Act 3. It's the same thing in Star Wars. A lot of movies are inaccessible, and they're called artsy-fartsy, and, you know, hipsters do bullshit with it, and bohemians, and whatever movement you want to talk about in the history of art and storytelling, because they try to deviate from this and undermine expectations and go against it. But if you're going to talk about the heart or the height of doing the heart of the story, of doing the, you know, we're going to take this convention and form, and we're going to do it to the nth degree, and we're going to do it the best way possible. Can you find anything else besides things like Star Wars and the Odyssey? Doesn't Star Wars belong beside the Odyssey and the Iliad and epics like that in the history of humanity?
I think it has a chance. It has a chance of being there.
Right. So that's what I was saying, Daniel. I wasn't being insulting at all.
And I think you can reverse it to even strengthen your point, Justin. Could you not read some of the criticisms of this Star Wars movie's story and development and plotting and things like that, and just apply them to the Odyssey or the Iliad? I mean, you'd have the same criticisms in storytelling. But that doesn't mean that those stories are bad. It's just that they are, despite those flaws, or sometimes even because of them, that's why they can connect on this level, that the such mass level.
Right. And the other thing I'm going to say, which, again, do not take this insulting because it's not intended to be, is there's an accessibility to Star Wars. And what I mean by that is, you know, when you look at, like, fiction by Ayn Rand, you look at her stories, they're very thematically and philosophically in depth. They're very deep. But that's not accessible to most people. Whereas Star Wars, in the ideas it's playing with, good and evil and, you know, anger and hate turning to the dark side, these are not deep philosophical and psychological examinations, but they get to a truth of the human condition that everyone can understand, no matter your education level, no matter your social class.
One of the criticisms of Star Wars has always been that it turned sci-fi into Westerns. And, you know, sci-fi, this is something I deeply criticize the new Star Trek films for. What was done there is something that was sci-fi was turned into something that was not sci-fi. There's no deep philosophical / technological issues in the new Star Wars movie or in the new Star Trek movies, for example, which is an essential element of those stories. But in this case, Star Wars has never been about sci-fi or deep philosophical questions. They've been about philosophical questions that are easily, there still are philosophical questions about good and evil, but they're easily accessible and they're presented in a way that everyone can connect to.
Yeah, and I would argue the American Western was so popular because it was accessible to everyone. That was the point. It represented the American spirit, rugged individualism, and everyone could understand that.
Yeah, I completely agree.
And that's the tradition Han Solo is part of, right?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, Clint Eastwood, John Wayne, Harrison Ford, it's all the same sort of spirit.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of it. I just don't need your Bantha Poodoo undertones.
They weren't in there, man. You're reading something in there that wasn't. I'm being very benevolent.
I've heard you talk about Star Wars, sir.
Dude, this movie's better than the original trilogy, all right? Suck it, okay? It's better. Straight out. It's fucking better. All right? Deal with it.
All right.
Last Reddit.
But, no. I had one last point,
okay,
which is the music. I don't want to not say how influential the music was. You take the original trilogy of the Star Wars with exactly how they are, put in some contemporary nonsense music, does not do as well. Not as emotionally engaging.
I would agree with that. And that's, you know, we talked about the music and the rhythm, the musicality and the rhythm of the movies. And I think that makes the music very important.
Yeah, the music is its own character. It's as integral a part of the movie as... And even the soundtrack, the non-musical effects, are just such an integral part of the storytelling.
And Ayn Rand captured
culturally,
that,
yeah.
In the first chapter of Atlas Shrugged with the theme, where the theme also means the musical theme that Dagny hears. And you know, one of the questions is, how do you adapt Ayn Rand? I think you need to bring that musicality in the same way.
John Williams.
Or Michael Giacchino.
He's not just as good, but he's getting there. Yeah. But just as a brief point on the music still, like in terms of, we talk about iconic lines and sayings, tell someone to sing the Star Wars theme. They can. Yeah. Or when someone evil happens, they'll go bum, 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 ba-dum, dun, da-da. Because I know that's the evil.
How many
music.
Sporting events have you heard the Imperial March at?
Yeah, exactly.
Fucking college bands, learn some new songs.
Okay, moving on.
Last Reddit. What would Star Wars The Force Awakens be like if George Lucas directed it? Racist. It would be incredibly racist.
Misa the black character. Get Misa some fried chicken. Yeah, it'd be very racist. It'd be CGI-er. You wouldn't actually have sets. Have you ever seen...
There would be long scenes of floating around in the Senate.
Yes. Have you ever seen the scenes of like the, it's from the, I think it's from Attack of the Clones, of the Jedi fighting off the Geonosians, but with no background put in. It's just them standing by a green screen, basically waving a stick. It's fucking hysterical. You should go Google it immediately. And it just shows you the absurdity of it all, of putting these great actors and this epic story against nothing, literal nothingness. It's hysterical. The only other thing I can think of specifically is that the story would have focused more on explaining the original series and less on creating a new story, which I think was George Lucas's big mistake with the prequels.
Yeah.
He would have tried too hard to make Rey, like, special. Like, would have put her in, like, a giant pod race scene on the... scavenger planet or something equivalent to make her like super special, whereas they just had her fight a little bit with the staff to show the way she was.
Yeah, absolutely. It certainly would not have been as good, and it would not have been successful.
It would have been
longer. It's true, it would have been longer. Yeah, that's really about it. I'm glad it wasn't. I'm glad he made his buck and left it up to the pros.
Do you think he liked the movie, or he has even gone to see it?
He said publicly that it was not his vision at all for Star Wars. In fact, he wrote, when he sold them the rights for Star Wars, he wrote them a story for the next movie, and Disney completely scrapped it and said, no thanks. So he's kind of pissed about the story.
Yeah, he gave them notes for the next three movies, right?
Yeah, and they burned them.
Yeah. But no, yeah. William, he was there. He showed up and he talked to JJ on the red carpet.
Yeah.
Wow.
But in the interviews, he said that this was not his vision. And he's pretty passive aggressive about not liking the movies.
But he's still getting paid, right?
Well, he got paid. I don't know if he's getting a percentage. Maybe he worked that into the deal. But he got $4 billion for the rights.
So he can shut the fuck up.
Which, by the way, fucking steal. If they've made $700 million in essentially 5 days, steal. And that's on the movies. That's not on the products.
Yeah, I was going to say, that doesn't count merchandising or the eventual Disneyland ticket and Disney World ticket sales from people going to Star Wars Land and everything.
Yeah.
Although we have to be hesitant about the $750 million because that doesn't take into account the marketing budget on the budget of production. So.
Yeah, but how much marketing do you need to do for Star Wars?
They did a lot of marketing.
There are more product tie-ins than I've ever seen in my entire life. When I log into Google and it's like, choose your path, dark or light. It's like, really? I need to do this with my Gmail? All right. Dark.
All right. let's leave this episode standing on a literal cliff for the cliffhanger.
Mm.
What did we learn this week? That was William's joke I stole.
Yeah.
Daniel?
I'm just curious who Cliff is and why we have to stand on him.
That was a Justin joke.
Yes, I know. It was terrible. I learned that begrudgingly over the course of the show, as I've thought about it, that you were probably right about the way in which Han Solo acts, but I still wouldn't call him the Ben Kenobi character.
All right, can we just note this, like note this podcast, and then like after the next movie comes out, you come back and tell me I'm right? Like, can we do that?
But I have at least learned that.
So you know, in the 40-year-old virgin,
to your position.
You know, in the 40-year-old virgin, where they're like, I think this is the first conversation you have when you're going to tell us you're gay. Like later, you're going to come out and say you're gay now, and this is the first conversation. That's what you just did. That was the first thing that you say to eventually agree with me.
Maybe. We'll see.
He's coming to the light side.
Never!
Well, I'm also taking pride in this moment because I am right about something about Star Wars.
Maybe.
Oh, man.
And it did take an entirely new movie for you to be right. Just pointing that out.
I admit that. I freely admit it. Admit it. What did you learn, William?
I learned that you really should feed the dogs before recording a podcast. They have this last 10 minutes. They have been all over me for attention because it's now time to eat.
Yeah, that'll happen with your pets when you're recording a podcast. They just got jealous of the cats.
They're like, he's talking, but he's not giving us food.
Justin's cats just get progressively more aggressive. Right. Although in this case,
I think we have had a meow on the podcast. I don't think you guys have heard the dogs. I think I've managed to turn the coffee on.
That's true.
We only had one meow this week. That is not anywhere close to our quota.
In Justin's case, I would just tell him, let the pussy win. So,
Justin, what did you learn this week?
Believe it or not, I have a greater appreciation for Star Wars as epic storytelling in the same tradition as the Odyssey and the Iliad. I still don't love it, but I greater appreciate what it's doing and what it's going for and the importance in culture and the history of narrative.
Maybe we have a very short aside that you can include or not, depending on whether you think we have a worthy conversation here. It doesn't have to be long, but we didn't ask at all, and I wanted to ask you if you think that either this Star Wars or Star Wars in general is romantic filmmaking in any sense. It is its own genre of epic saga, but do you think there is romanticism in either this Star Wars or any Star Wars?
I mean, that was a question I asked William coming out of the theater, and that's what spurred on the epic discussion.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't think it is romantic in its entirety.
Yeah,
I think it is a different genre, but
I think it has elements of romanticism and that the characters embody certain traits, but I don't think it's romantic as in there's one unifying theme because of, as I said, the ideas behind it aren't clearly and very intricately defined. They're not defined enough to have all the different characters represent different sides of the same idea or the way that the idea affects things. It's right. Sort of like there's good and there's evil, and this is how you become good, this is how you become evil, and everyone's dealing with it, and everyone's a different archetype, but archetype is not the same thing as romanticism.
Well, right. Would you say, though, is it really a post-romantic saga, though? I mean, can you see how the romanticism, like, influences this as a saga? I mean, the whole idea that we can even put this on par with something like the Odyssey or the Iliad is because it does mix those two. It borrows things from the romantic side of storytelling and puts it into the saga.
So this is what I would say. This is what I would say. So history is rhythms, which works with what we're saying about an epic. You know, if you look at the history of thought, Dark Ages, reason. Dark Ages, reason, right? So things exist on a mixed plane. Nothing is purely romantic, purely naturalistic. That's just the way we use to classify things. I would say Star Wars is as close as you can get to balancing romanticism and naturalism in a good way, whereas naturalism doesn't take it over and make it shitty, and it also doesn't get rid of the things that make romanticism good. That's what I would say.
I think that's a very good way to look at it. I would say that the original Star Wars in the context of filmmaking, and you have to look at other films that were coming out in the mid to late 70s and how horrifically naturalistic they were. In perhaps some ways, even much worse than filmmaking is today in many regards. And Star Wars in that context, looks like this huge romantic breath of fresh air in filmmaking. But in fact, I would say that the original set of Star Wars is quasi-romantic, sort of in the way you say, almost maybe neo-romantic. But
well, that's around the same time the Western was on its way out, right?
Yes.
And I would say the Western was very romantic. They just all had the same theme. It was all about American rugged individualism. It was the same story told over and over again. But that, I would say that was the height of American romanticism in cinema. Now, we've had other things since that where, you know, you look at a Die Hard where that carries on the tradition of the Western and just updates it for modern time. It's very romantic in that same way. But Star Wars came at the end of that romantic period in film. And then that's when the naturalistic period, as you're pointing out all these things, started, when things like Dirty Harry, where you have to show him going up all the way, keep going, keep going. So it exists right on that precipice.
Yeah. Go back and look around the same time in the context of films that came out. They're horrifying. But anyway, I wanted to get that. I wanted to shove that discussion in there. If you enjoyed that discussion or any of the discussion we had today or any of the previous podcasts, why don't you go to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating? Not 4, not 3. 1, I guess, if you're really pissed. I'd rather have 1 than 2. 2 just really ticks me off. It's sort of like we gave you some value, but not like, no, 1 or 5. You pick. Preferably 5. That helps us get to new audiences, helps us reach.
I think we only have 5-star reviews so far.
We do only have 5-star reviews so far.
I can fix that.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Why are you like opening the door to that?
I'm saying 1 or 5. And if you're choosing 1 or 5, we're clearly not a 1. So I think we deserve a 5. Just saying. If you don't want to do that, if that's too much effort for you, totally understand. You can go to twitter.com/themidside, facebook.com/themidside, like, follow, interact, share, spread the word, the gospel of the midside. That's right. Preach, mofos. And then if you're really hardcore, like William, like Mark, like Teresa, like, Rob, and some other folks, if I didn't name you, I sincerely apologize. You can go to patreon.com/themidside and you can choose to give us money. Yes, not imperial credits, but real money per episode that we deliver.
Hard
whether
currency.
That's hard money. We accept gold. No, we don't. We
accept
fiat currency only. But you can give us money per episode. 10 cents, buck, $600, you know, whatever you want. We'll take it. Helps us keep it going. Give us a little marketing budget in the new year. And one thing I want to remind people of is next week, the show of shows, folks.
I'm excited. I'm so excited.
It's the end of year, Midside Awards. And, oh, it's going to be a doozy. Oh, the cinema this year. So terrible. Just kidding. So be on the lookout for
Age
that.
Age of Ultron sweeping everything.
Yeah. Who will win the prestigious Romanticism Award? What was it called? Doesn't have a name.
Zack Snyder.
The Zack Snyder Romanticism Award. Who will win, you know, Best Everything Awards?
Who will win the Tom Brady Best Performance in the Face of Doubters Award?
Who knows?
Won by Tom Brady last year.
Who knows who will win it this year?
Will Tom Brady win it again?
I don't
Could
know.
Could be. Could be anyone. So tune in next week. Thanks so much. We love you, and may the force be with you.
I'm Justin M. Lesneski, and I hope you learned something this week. This concludes your journey into the midside. Good luck out there, and remember, if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.
Welcome to the midside, where your lack of spoilers is disturbing. Kylo Ren kills Han Solo.
Wait. You need to go back and do that again.
What? Why?
Sorry, there was a note. It's, we find your lack of spoilers disturbing.
Fine. Fuck. Jesus. You fucking nerd. God.
30 seconds into the show, we already have the end drop.
Make me talk about fucking Star Wars for a whole episode.